I'm Reggie.
And I'm Brian.
And this is R&B Talks.
R&B Talks.
So, Brian, you were just talking about man nips.
Great segue. I love it. Look, dude, we have nipples. I mean, they're useless. They don't really serve a purpose. Like, it's not, like, connected to an organ. Like, if you lose a nipple, you're not going to die.
No.
But I'm not ashamed of my man nips, man. I'm not.
Dude, I just don't like it. Like, if I'm wearing like a shirt that just doesn't hang right, and yeah. So all of a sudden, if it doesn't work right in the chest, you see these man nips just sitting there staring at you, dude. It's like, I hate it, dude. I hate it.
I just getting a straight eyeball from the man nips.
I don't like it. I don't mind it. I guess I got big man nips. I don't know, but I just don't like it.
You got dinner plate nips.
I guess
it's okay, man. It's all right.
But you know, there's who was it that had surgery for this? Dwayne
The Rock Johnson. Yeah, he had, pardon me, but the term for it in the weightlifting community is bitch tits. And he had to have those fixed from the steroids. You get those. If you look back in like his early wrestling career, he had like little tiny boobies and they had to go in and fix those.
It's not like, I don't have no like that. I'm just saying it does bother you. I've never been a steroid guy, so there you go.
You know, I've never taken a course of steroids. I've thought about doing like a 90-day just to see what happens. But I'm like, knowing my luck, I'll stroke out. My brain will
put working. But there's some.
I'll crap my pants in front of everybody. I don't want
to
do that.
What I think is interesting, though, is there seems to be a. Well, kind of the same way we've seen in other medical or pharmaceutical or health related stuff where there's like this real anti to. Anything that boosts testosterone or anything like that, there's like a huge, you know. And so I'm wondering if, because RFK Jr. got.
Yes, he did.
So I'm wondering if there's any more male-centered research that will be more prevalent because he's kind of straightening out what's healthy, what's not.
Well, I think he is. I think part of the problem you have, and this I have studied this, being someone who works in the health and fitness industry and is a very interested in this topic, a lot of the derivatives that we put in our foods,
especially soy,
MSG, things like that, are testosterone suppressants. And that's purposeful. The food industry did that on purpose. Now, that being said, he's already outlawed one of the red dyes. Go get them. There's a yellow dye on the table next. Both of those have been, you know, seen to suppress suppress estrogen and testosterone, which I think goes along with big food and big pharma's need to turn us all into eunuchs and not make any difference between us because then they can take all of our money.
Yeah, I hear you.
But overall, there's not just a movement of food to suppress testosterone, man. There's a literal socioeconomic movement to suppress testosterone.
Yeah. I say that is because, you know, it's been so demonized, right? But yet there's other, if you look to other, there's some science, and I would call it real science, that legitimizes the use of, once you get, as an older man, like even where we're at in our 40s, almost 50s.
Yeah, I'll be 50 in 3 months.
Yeah, but so there's some legitimate saying that, well, if you can use some kind of anabolic something or other, you know, that helps your whole thing, everything.
I'll give you an example of how much testosterone is important. I read a study. The American Medical Journals was the study. And this was done like in 1987, 1988. The study wasn't recent. They took 1,000 men, all who had comorbidities like diabetes, heart disease, arthritis, all those things. And they split them in half. And they put 500 of them on a cardio routine solely. And they put 500 of them on a cardio and resistance training. And they used free weights only.
Uh-huh.
The comorbidities in the free weight and cardio side reduced 300 to 400% faster than just the cardio side.
Sure.
There are certain peptides and partial proteins and lipids that your body releases during weight training that actually help with healing, help with your internal scarring in the body.
But it's not just weight training either.
Yeah.
It's like lifting heavy
anything weight. Heavy. Yeah.
It's well, heavy I mean, weight.
And this is what's so funny. If you talk to even in women, the highest experts in women's strength will tell you that every woman should lift as heavy as their neuromuscular system will allow them to lift. And the reason is not to bulk up. You're not going to bulk up unless you're eating excess calories and you're on something. It's to keep you strong, to keep your bones strong, to keep your joints strong. So many times I've heard from women, well, I don't want to get all bulky. Trust me, you're not. You'd have to have a completely different physiological system. That's why a lot of women bodybuilders, to get the size that they have to do a steroid course.
Well, right? I think people don't understand it too. Like, it's really difficult to bulk up. It actually is very difficult. Now, for guys, it is easier, but almost it's not really because of the difference of training. It's really because of the lifestyles and like the eating choices and stuff. But yeah. In general, what men eat and what women eat are pretty different.
Yeah.
Amounts and everything, right? So, like for me, it's easy to bulk up if I do heavy weight and everything like that.
Yeah.
Because I eat a lot of food. There ain't no joke. Yeah. And probably too much, to be honest. But that helps for bulking. That's what you do to bulk up.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking to put on mass, you have to go into an excess calorie intake, right? Like you have to go above your total body heat. You have to go above your total body expenditure.
Speaking of that, look, I got another mace.
Oh, very nice.
So I got the 5 pound. I'll tell you why. So after our episode last week and everything, we were talking about how I got back into it. So Monday I did my thing with and I have a 10 pound because I figured I didn't want to go too heavy. I just get a 10 pound. But after Monday, my arm was killing, like this whole thing again was just on fire.
Well, and there's a secondary purpose for that too. Lighter weight, faster movement equals a little bit better cardio workout.
Right. So I mean, but I'm guessing because if I go swing a splitting axe, mm-hmm. which is like maybe, 5 pounds or something, it's really not, depending on the head or whatever, 4 or 5 pounds. Well, the ones I got. And that didn't bother me.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing just the abundance of 10 pound swinging agitated this.
Well,
more.
and you're even when you're injured, you take a few steps backwards.
Yeah.
So you've got to work back into it. Right. Right. Like I'm sure when you hit the 10 pound, you had worked up to the 10 pound.
No.
So you'll hit the 10 pound eventually again.
Here's the thing. Cause I went from the splitting stuff with using splitting mauls and splitting axes. Right. So the mauls were being used as well. The one, is an 8 pound, right.
Mm-hmm.
So I was swinging that stuff around and probably harder than I would hit the tire because I'm really trying to split the wood and everything, right?
Yeah.
So that's what I did until I got to the tire. And so now that I've trying to get back into it, so I bought that one so I could at least go out there and try it with this lighter weight. If it doesn't hurt my arm and then I'm going to be fine.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Anyway, that's been my – so here's another thing. Speaking of – all this stuff. So we have Tulsi Gabbard that has been confirmed.
RFKJ.
RFKJ is confirmed.
Pete Hegseth. Pam Bondi.
the dream the team
Secretary
is alive.
Secretary of Treasury has been confirmed. Like, okay, so here's the thing. All right, and this is where I think the Democrats are really struggling. You lost. The majority of America doesn't want your way of doing things. A lot of people hate Trump, but they are okay with him as long as he's making America better. And there's been a lot of Democratic slip-ups lately. A lot of these Dem senators who go out there and think they're rallying somebody and then the Freudian slip comes out. One went out and said, we're okay with working in collusion with and keeping American citizens in the dark. Everybody's favorite Elizabeth Warren's my favorite statement of all time. There is no law that says that the American people are allowed to see what we spend their tax money on. Are you psychotic? Are you literally psychotic? You need to retire because you obviously can't control your mouth. And then my best one was, who's the lady the older black lady,
Maxine
Waters, who went in Congress while talking about how bad it was that Elon was digging into this, slipped a little bit of a confession into a statement when she said, "We don't know what they have on us." We're starting to see what your actual worries are. Your actual worries are the piggy banks. Somebody glued the piggy bank shut. You can't get in it anymore. The judges are now favoring Trump in these lawsuits that he's now been given. They say that 99% of these lawsuits he will win. You're out of options. So now your only option is to scream and holler like an idiot. AOC, how does she not? How have the people in her district not gone, okay, enough?
Okay.
Right?
Here's, I'm going to, this is going to be pretty sharp.
Please do.
I don't.
Carve it up, big guy.
Yeah. You have to be some kind of special stupid to sit there and blather on about how you don't see the evidence. Where's the evidence? Show me the trail. Blah, blah, blah about the whole Doge thing.
They have.
When you can go to the freaking like C-SPAN and all, like you can listen to the hearings.
The press secretary brought it to the press briefing and offered to hand out literature showing all of the things that they're finding.
But this is what I mean. This is all I hear. And especially from some of these quote unquote people who think they're smart and they're liberals, because they have this veil of just willful ignorance that they smacks them in the face constantly, that they cannot break through because they are totally freaking wrong. Like, this whole thing is showing how corrupt and how just mismanaged the government has been under the liberal woke hive mind control.
Yeah. Well, here's
my
favorite. And here's how you know they're wrong. No Americans are going, "Yeah, you're right." Everybody's like, "Enough, bro."
Here's the thing that catches enough. Me. Even if you don't watch the hearings and you see all this stuff,
yeah,
no one's refuting the line items.
Yeah.
You don't see people go the like it, you said, has not refuted.
No, here's the best part of that too. There's a hard left lady, and I can't remember her name mainly because she gets on my nerves when I see her.
Joy Behar?
No, she's in the Congress. Joy Behar's The View is what happens when you live in a vacuum and you're wealthy and you say stupid stuff all the time, but the people around you are yes people, so they pump you up and tell you you're right. But this young lady, and she's a young woman, she's not an older woman, she went into the room of Congress and said that $50 million for condoms to Gaza was a lie. No, it wasn't. You can go and find it right now. You can go online and find the line item. I actually went and looked. You can go there. The only trick that the devil has is deception. You are seeing people who are demonically motivated. This is what you're seeing. This ding, is ding, demonic ding. Motivation, right? This is the devil saying, "Oh crap, I'm losing my grip. I'm going to start poking and prodding." You know, even Mitch McConnell, bro.
I don't have any love for Mitch McConnell. You're an old dude, and I don't want to hate on you because you're old, and I don't like to hate on old people. I don't have any love for him, though,
but bro. But even you have voted against the common sense placement, the multi-generational, multi-party people that Trump is trying to put in place. Tulsi Gabbard is an independent. RFKJ is a Democrat. He is trying to go across party lines and figure out how to make this work. Shut up, Mitch, and get in line. I honestly think that Mitch McConnell now is where Joe Biden was before the election. I think he's mentally incapacitated. I think people are making decisions for him. They're pushing him in a certain direction. But despite the fact that Mitch has turned on his party, they're still placing everyone Trump wants. Eventually, the Democrats now have zero power. And they're seeing right now what happens when a united electorate comes together and says, "Yeah, we're done. So we're going to put these people in place because this guy's promised us something. And so far, he's worked at a pace that is breakneck in comparison to anything."
We have not, since I've been like cognizant of like reality and as a person.
Yeah.
This is absurd. The pace in which things are going, you know, when it was, I remember having an argument back when Clinton was in office and I argued that, the economy was the such and such because of the stuff that Reagan did. It was taking so long to catch up because of the years and this. Any that boot dude right now, this stuff is just, it's flying off the rails, bro. Yeah. Now, what I'm looking for, because Doge is in the IRS now.
Yeah. And they'll be in the Treasury soon.
I am tickled pink. People say, are you worried about this? Are you kidding me? You let Hunter Biden into like these high level national security meetings, and you think I'm worried about Elon Musk?
You let a known alcoholic and crackhead into sensitive
and,
meetings.
And I'm worried about Musk.
And you're worried about a guy like Elon Musk who takes dead companies and turns them into billion-dollar companies.
It's not just that, though. Okay, here's my biggest thing about Musk, right? People like all this stuff. Okay, you have no idea what autism is then.
Yeah.
You have no idea how that brain works. I don't think anybody has a clue, to be honest. Even the neuroscientists that try to study it, there are so little we know about this stuff. But having a neuro spicy kid.
Yeah.
I see how she is, how she reacts to things or whatever it is. To say that at the level of autistic kind of thing that probably, because Elon acts a lot like my daughter.
Yeah. Okay.
Very social, weird, you know, it's the way that he sits there and he doesn't mind pausing for 12 seconds to shut somebody down. But it's logic, and it's like, it's very much an OCD kind of detail-oriented problem-solving attitude than it is.
It's got to make sense.
Yeah.
If it don't make sense, I can't do it.
He's going to fit it into a box that he has, right?
Yeah.
He has to. That's part of how that – anyway, it just blows my mind. No, he is the least person I'm worried about of anybody we've had doing anything in the government. And you cannot sit there and – I mean, because we've had elected officials. We've had bureaucrat-appointed officials. We've had all these different kind of people that's been in there over the freaking decades, that last 30 years. And there's so much wrong with that. And even the first Trump presidency, I had a problem with, because I'm like, why didn't he do anything? What's going on?
Yeah.
And –
he trusted the wrong people. Well, he did.
I know, but still, you got to say, look, dude, you trusted. And I put it, it's still his responsibility.
Yeah, for sure.
But anyway, so here we are now. He's mad. He's on a war path trying to straighten things out. He's got people in place that I don't trust anybody explicitly, especially if I don't know them. I mean, I can't do that. But I definitely think it's far better than what's been going on. Okay.
Well, he has position now too. Like his last presidency, he didn't have the position he has now, in the sense of his approval ratings weren't as high as they were now. He couldn't get anybody appointed that he really wanted. He took what was given to him.
A lot of rhinos were there, like
Republican
jackasses who are part of the problem.
Well, and the biggest problem we have right now is, you know, there's still some there. You know, the representative from Alaska, the lady who's, of all the fights you want to have on the House floor, you want to fight over the name of a mountain?
I don't know.
You silly ninny.
Yeah.
What is wrong with you?
Let me get back to this though. I just think the people that are just throwing that can't accept this. I think you really have a psychosis problem.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I get it. You want proof, you want evidence, but I posted this on purpose.
Yeah.
I said I'd explain it to you, but I ran out of crayons and I can't understand it for you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really, that's how I feel at this point. Cause there's nothing logical about it. It's the same thing with it's like the mindset in here. I boil this down to a lot of things. Like when your mindset gets to the point where you're in that, what I would say you're woke, hive mind educated, there's a worldview that's out of touch.
Well, that's putting it lightly.
I know. And you are so skewed on reality. It doesn't really matter what subject we're talking about. You're seeing things from an unrealistic perspective, in my opinion. There's nothing I can do for you. I can show you everything. I can explain to you theologically Christian things that doesn't match up with what you're saying. You flat out refuse to accept and look at other media sources than CNN and NBC and who have, and like Politico and NPR, who have been getting money from, you said, to promote the liberal hive mind.
Yeah.
And so you don't, I mean, what are you going to do if you just don't, you won't look the other way? That's your fault. You know, it's not mine for not convincing you. The evidence is all there. You just don't accept it.
Well, here's how I look at it.
Anyway,
for the last 4 years under Joe Biden, we were constantly told as people who wanted things to be done honestly and fairly that our ignorance was ours and they didn't understand our ignorance. I will give you back the same thing that you gave me for 4 years. You do not understand that the electorate doesn't want your way of life. The electorate has said, no, we don't want this. The majority of us don't want to live like this. So your ignorance is yours. And what you're seeing is when you lose a fight, there's two ways that somebody's going to respond. You'll either respond by getting up, dusting yourself off, shaking somebody's hand, yep, walking away and saying, you know what, I lost. I got to go figure out why I lost and come back next time and do better. Or you react like the liberal elite are doing right now.
Yes.
And I'm going to run down some quick examples for you. Their responses to lie. Bernie Sanders lied during RFKJ about taking money from Big Pharma. He took $32 million. Elizabeth Warren just continually lies. She lied about American people needing to see the taxes. She lied about the fact that she was taking money from Big Pharma. AOC has gone out and told about a half a dozen absolutely blatant, ridiculous, improvable lies. You've got the hard left that are left in the Senate and the Congress who are hanging on by their nails, and they just continue to lie. Everybody knows now that you're lying, right? So yes, the best play for you at this point is to say, you know what? You're right. I lied. And now I got to work to gain your respect back. But instead, you continue to pile lie on top of lie on top of lie.
Yes.
And your house of cards is crumbling. Well, actually, it's crumbled. Like the sinking sand has shifted and everything's fallen down. And now everybody sees you for what you actually are.
Yes.
I think what you're seeing, again, it's demonic, man. There's no doubt about it to me that the devil is moving on these people and he has taken them by the hand and has said, all right, deception is the game. So let's keep on trying to deceive. So, yeah. One of the things I wanted to talk about was, this phrase that's being used lately, constitutional.
Oh God.
It's a constitutional crisis. Every single thing that Donald Trump has done while in office, other than the born American thing, I'm still kind of trying to figure that out, but every other thing that he's done has been under the constitutional power given to the head executive for this country. This language, we have Democrats out in the street right now saying, we're going to fight this in the street. Don't do what the police tell you. You're trying to get people killed so you can save your cause.
Absolutely.
Because you need examples. So you're going to rile up people and send them into the streets, and somebody's going to go out there and they're going to get in the face of a cop, and that cop is going to defend himself, and something bad's going to happen. And then you're going to try to deflect that back on the Republican Party. You are a dangerous, dangerous person. And as far as I'm concerned, you don't need to be in our government. When you behave that way and you purposely try to instigate violence, you do not have a place in our government.
Well, not just that. You're a criminal. I mean, you're inciting violence, period. And I mean, that's not acceptable as far as I'm concerned. The only time it's acceptable to incite violence is if there's really a existential crisis of the society or culture or country or whatever, and it's time to self-defense. It's that time, right?
Yeah.
Whatever that case may be, tyrannical or invasion, whatever. But that's not what we have here. Yeah. These are just whiny liberals who are losing their corruptive money bank or money laundering scheme and their piggy bank, and they're going to get – they're losing all this stuff. I don't care. But the problem with all this, though, comes back to the people who are listening to them, though. right? That's where I look. If I see where if you had a way to make yourself a lot of money, to be insulated, to be like more power, all this stuff, why would you not take that? If you're by human nature, that's what you would do. And so I see that. But what I don't see is that people who can't see that, you know what I mean? That's really all what it boils down to.
It boils down to pure, unadulterated, willful ignorance.
I know. Anyway, so look, I am so encouraged by what's been going on with Doge, with the administration, with the way things are going, with the layoffs of the Here, let me say this. Look, I don't want any. Look, it's not like it's a comfortable thing for me to go. I'm happy for people to be losing their job.
I'm not happy about.
Right. This is what I'm getting at. That's really not it. It's like we have a real problem in the federal government where it's so vastly too big, right? Yeah. It's so overreaching. There's so many things that are wrong. So you're going to have, as a repercussion of that, there's a lot of federal employees that will be let go.
Well, here's the thing,
I want that to happen.
They're offering you a buyout. They're offering you a buyout. They're saying, hey, we know this sucks to lose your job. Here's 8 months worth of pay.
Yeah, you won't get that. Now, here's the thing that really bothers me, right? These government employees have been there forever.
Yeah.
They don't understand that in corporate America, you can't get none of this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, we're not insulated from our jobs. There's no, like, tenure. There's none of this stuff happens in corporate America. Tomorrow, they could hand me my check and say, you're gone. This is what
we'll give you 30 days of insurance and you got to pay for COBRA.
Yeah, that's it. And that's what I mean. Like, okay, it's hard for me to feel sorry for you in this position when we're going to shrink the government, make the country better, make the economy better, blah, blah, blah. And then we know this is tough for you. So here's 8 months. You do not get that kind of crap anywhere.
Buyouts are only given if you negotiate that in an employment contract and that's it.
So, I mean, I'm just saying like, look, I don't care if you have to drive to work. I don't care.
If you're gonna cry about going to work, shut up.
I just don't.
I go to work every day.
I get that it's been something for you, and that does increase that changes your family cash flow because now you have to go back to spending money. I get that you were hired in though for that.
Yeah.
Okay. You were. So that was a temporary thing from the get go. Okay. Now maybe you don't need to go into the office. Maybe it's pointless for you to work in an office. Maybe it's remote's just fine, but we got to get through a period of where we sort out this stuff and get the whole federal workforce back into a way it should be.
Yeah.
And you know, I would say possibly that does work out to where eventually things can be remote or not, but dude, we're going to have to go through some stuff.
There's going to be some pain.
Yeah.
Well, and another thing I want to encourage people to, I have read through with a fine tooth comb, the tax cut plan that Trump is bringing to the table. And the Democrats, again, just continually lie about this program.
Oh, God, yeah.
This will be the largest and most profitable tax cut for middle and lower class Americans in the history of the United States. There has never been something that will be more beneficial for the middle class and down. And I am a middle class family. That will be more beneficial.
And homeschoolers.
Homeschoolers. The child tax credit's going to stay. We're talking about no tax on overtime. We're talking about, you know, no tax on tips. We're talking about going back to Trump era tax cuts. We're talking about doing some things that are going to make your paycheck a whole lot bigger. And it's going to force things to be a whole lot less expensive. The tariffs will work.
Well, I don't know. Look, I think that's debatable. However, I still want to try it because we haven't done it.
Well,
we haven't even collected on the bills that are due.
Yeah. Like the problem we have now. Well, but here's the thing. They all came to the table. Right?
Dude,
they wouldn't come to the table before.
Everybody's whining and moaning.
But they all came to the table.
Oh, yeah. So we have everybody now negotiating.
Yeah, negotiations.
Nobody is you're right. Nobody's been doing that at all. But okay. politics is where it is. But I gotta go back to this whole thing. Like, I just don't see this progressive Christianity thing. It becomes more and more, and it comes from the elite liberal woke hive mind, right?
Well, I'm going to say this out loud. It also comes from the elite hard right Republican hive mind. I've heard some Republican figures say some things that are absolutely unfounded biblically and completely go against the very thing that they claim to represent. Yep. So this is one thing that I
package not a political and hint thing.
To both sides.
It's not a political thing.
You know,
you have examples of where, you know, and here's the thing, anytime I've had a discussion about, legitimacies of certain lifestyles or whatever, they always point to a couple of different, preachers or something that give sermons on this or that. But you have to understand though, too, that those sermons are, I've watched them all. I'm telling you. And I've done this on purpose because not that I wanted to, but I test my own theology, I should say, against academic respected scholarship all the time.
Any healthy person does.
And I want to know if someone comes with some actual academic, what I would consider academic or scholarship around a certain topic or whatever that differs from mine. I want to see it because I could be wrong. I'll just be honest. I haven't found any of that. So where I'm going with this, and we've said this, I think you mentioned church tradition last time, and I thought about this. Okay. There are respected church traditions that should be upheld. Okay. But those are really come from and are rooted into, like, they don't contradict the gospel.
Yes.
Okay. Those church traditions. And I don't even have an example for you right now because.
Well, there's too many.
Well,
honestly,
I mean, it's like gathering every week on Sunday. I would say that's a church tradition, right?
Yeah.
Do you have to do that? Is that what the Bible says to do? No.
Is it something that should be banned? No.
No.
No. I go to church on Sundays.
Can it be different? Sure. Sure. But there's reasons why they've done it that way. Okay.
Well, one that you could get rid of. You got to dress up for church.
Yeah, no.
No. That's 100% not true, and it doesn't need to exist. You need to welcome people as they are in order to get them to understand that you love them as they are. So when you start throwing arbitrary rules at people, then you're just doing more damage than you are good.
And here's the thing. I don't, you know, people throw around a lot about what I don't understand is like the angst against the pastors who wear a t-shirt and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So silly.
I don't really care. Like, yeah. I really don't. I mean, granted, I think in order to reach certain groups of people,
yeah,
that's not going to work. Okay.
If I'm going to an elite group of executives to speak to them about spirituality, I may dress in a nice shirt and pants and dress shoes simply because I need to relate to them. Right.
Yes.
But if I'm going to, you know, a bunch of high school kids, I'm not going to show up in a suit and tie because they're not going to show up in a suit and tie because I'm going to stand out like a sore thumb and they're going to see me as a stuffy authority figure.
Yeah. I mean, so I guess I'm just saying there's some church traditions that are worth paying attention to,
yes,
and respecting, but there's others that, I mean, that it depends on the church
too. Yeah.
So anyway, that was something else that bothered me. I think I was trying to look for this, Brian, and I couldn't find it. Cause I know we talked briefly about, because I think this is a short topic. It's not like a long one. The sun and stranger thing.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
So yeah. Like, and this is from the Holy Note, which I love that guy to death. I just, he's funny. He's biblically sound. He's very articulate when he
really
speaks.
Is a great guy to watch. His stuff is,
yeah,
really,
and
funny.
His mustache and, is epic. So yeah, I mean, you kind of
awesome mustache.
So he posted us, and I don't remember. This was from the JD Vance thing when somebody was talking to him about, and I don't remember particulars, but this has been a minute, and so the Holy Note posted on his Facebook. Took a survey, like, okay, if you're on a cliff and you're holding your son and a stranger from falling, who do you save? If you can save one, who do you save, right? It's from a Christian basis. Like, your son's already saved, so you let him go and you save the stranger, or do you save your son and don't save the stranger?
Yeah, but therein lies a ton of questions. The words, we need context, right? Is your son saved? Is he not saved?
I don't think it matters.
Well, it does, because it changes the dynamic. Because then you have two unsaved people within your grasp, right? I think there are certain things that aren't expressed in that question. And if your son isn't saved, my question would be like, what are you doing? If you're a Christian and you haven't worked to get your kids to recognize Christ, you might be missing the target.
But I guess for me, I just have to go back and simplify it.
Okay.
Okay. What is my priorities as far as the Bible is concerned as a man? Number one, God. Love God before all else.
Yes.
Before all else, right? What's the second priority? My wife.
Yeah.
What's the third priority?
My kids.
Fourth, everything else.
Yeah.
Right? So as far as I'm concerned, I don't care if he's saved or not or whatever. My responsibility that I will stand before God on is my son.
Yeah.
I'm going to save my son.
We're called to shepherd, right?
We are.
Under all circumstances.
We are. But if there's no question in my mind, I'm saving my son.
Yeah, me too.
I don't
care. You're asking me what side I land on, it's going to be.
I don't care. I don't care what the stranger saved or not or whatever. It doesn't matter. My priorities, if biblically, are God, wife, kids.
Church.
That's it. So, and I don't think, I think that's just the way to look at it. Now, would I necessarily fault anyone if they said, well, I know my son is saved. He's going to go meet Jesus and live in eternity, blah, blah, blah. The stranger has been dealing with some stuff and this could help him pull into there. You know, it's one of those things where I'm like, I still think you're wrong. And I do. But would I like hold that up to like a vicious act or something?
No.
I mean,
no.
But it would rub me the wrong way. Okay. That's really where I'm trying to go with this. And I don't think you can, it's like that thing where let me go back to this. This is a better question for myself. Okay. For you and for me. What if you're holding you got two people that you're on a cliff, you're holding each arm. You can save one. One's in your oldest son, one's your youngest son. See what I mean? Now that one's
tough.
That one's a whole different ball game.
I can't answer that question.
Right. You can't.
There's no answer for me for that.
The problem is I couldn't either. If I was holding both my daughters.
Yeah.
And I could save one of them. I would be just stuck. Cause there's no way I'd be able to pick between my daughters.
Yeah. Yeah.
No way. You know, that's the real dilemma that I would have, right?
Yeah.
Now, all these are fictitious scenarios anyway, yes. but that all comes about by like, and I think this all relates back to when Vance was talking about how we got to take care of our country first before we start, handing out a whole bunch of stuff across the world, which I've been saying for decades now. So anyway, I think that was a quick topic, dude, that we could jump into, but I thought it was interesting to talk about.
It's a very interesting, it's a interestingly difficult question in the fact that, I think depending on the individual, I think it would be easy for someone without a family to answer that question. Oh, sure. You can't. Yeah. Until you have kids, until you can look your kids in the eye and know how important they are to you and know that they are gifts from God, you can't answering that question without having kids is impossible. Which kind of leads me into what I wanted to talk about, Reggie.
What's that, Brian?
Worry. Because we seem to live in a world full of it right now.
Yeah, man. Fear and worry.
I tell people all the time, I was having a conversation the other day and the guy goes, you don't really seem to worry about a whole lot. And I was like, I've been through a lot in my life. I don't normally go into my life story and hopefully one day you and I can do our testimonies on here because I think they would be a very effective tools for people to hear a lot about why, who we are and where we come from. But I told him, I said, dude, I've been through so much in my life. And God has brought me to this point where my family is safe and everybody's fed and, you know, we're making a living and we're doing our thing and we're, you know, I got the podcast and, you know, and all these things. I said, I've been gifted beyond the measure of what I deserve. If I'm worrying, then I'm not listening. God is a gracious and loving and generous God who has shown me in so many ways that he's going to be generous for me. But again, I go back to this, the deception of the devil. People need to realize that Satan cannot create anything. He can only distort what God creates, and he can only manipulate. And I believe that that is what worry and fear is manipulation.
I agree. Yeah.
Jordan Peterson talked about a study that he read where he said that 88% of what people worry about never comes to fruition. So this existential crisis that we're in where we're, you know, oh my gosh, this could happen and that can happen. You're right, man. It could. I could go outside. As soon as I leave here, I could go outside and a tree could fall and kill me. Am I worried about it? Nope, not at all. But I'm not going to add it to the list, right? Like, I got enough as a man in the current world. I have enough battles on my plate. You know, this ain't going to be one of them, worrying all the time.
Yeah. So there's many aspects of this. So in the biblical text, anxiety and worry are kind of interchangeable, for what they talk about.
Yeah. Okay.
I thought it was interesting to look at though, like what WebMD would say for anxiety or worry, right?
Yeah.
So what they kind of talk about is how a chronic worry or emotional stress can trigger the fight or flight response.
Yeah.
Okay. So which does a couple things. It releases stress hormones like cortisol, which can boost blood sugar levels and triglycerides.
Yep.
And the hormones cause physical reactions. Like, here's some of them, like difficulty swallowing, dizziness, dry mouth, fast heart rate, fatigue, headaches, concentration, irritability, muscle aches, tension, all kinds of stuff. Right. And
it's
then, if it's not that the excessive fuel from this fight or flight response, if it's not used in physical activities, could be lead to suppression of the immune system, digestive disorders, muscle tension, short-term memory loss, premature coronary artery disease, or heart attack. Okay. So I think even medically we can see where worry and anxiety is not really a good thing. Okay. It has all these physical traits that can come up with actual things that affect your body, right? Now, the secular way to deal with it is you talk to your doctor, you exercise regularly, you eat a healthy, balanced diet. They say drink some caffeine because the caffeine stimulates the nervous system.
Yep.
Try to be more conscious of your worries and talk to a therapist and learn to like relax and meditate.
Does everybody realize that we actually have an on-call therapist in our lives 24/7?
You know, it's funny. It's funny. Because the Bible has a lot of things to say about it not being a therapist, but just being the one.
Well, here's the thing. First of all, cortisol is not something you'll ever get rid of. Cortisol is a steroid hormone that helps the body respond to stress. Cortisol is released in higher amounts when the body perceives a threat. A threat to the body is anything that heightens the nervous system reaction.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay, so cortisol helps regulate metabolism, blood pressure, and body's inflammatory response. And the thing about it is that there are healthy levels of cortisol.
Agreed. Right? Agreed.
Something I thought was interesting. There is another name for cortisol in medicine. Hydrocortisone is a form of cortisol. Another way that the pharma association is putting more stuff in our body we don't need. We naturally produce enough cortisol to survive. What I tell people about this is, the most dangerous thing about worry is, okay, so I spoke about this while teaching one of my workout classes the other night. Stress really is nothing. Cortisol is produced, and the levels of cortisol that are produced at in our body is in measurement to how we react to stress. What do we do when we get stressed out, man? We freeze up. We seize up. We don't want to do anything. We want to get away from the world. We want to cuddle up in the corner and turn on the television and lose ourselves in something. It doesn't work. The best, they've studied this for 30 or 40 years consistently. The absolute best response to stress is to get up and move. If you want to regulate the cortisol response, or I like to call it the worry response, if you want to regulate that, get up and move. Go for a walk. Pace. Anything that you can do, do stretch, do something. Because what that automatically does is triggers your nervous system into believing that it needs to burn the excess cortisol up, right? But when we get all seized up and we're like, oh, worried and I can't do anything, and we sit there, you're going to gain weight. You're going to lose muscle because cortisol is the antithesis to muscle growth. And you're also going to affect the hypothalamus in your brain shrinks when you worry. So that's where short-term memory loss comes from. So think about that. When you worry, you destroy your ability to mentally function properly. So all of these things are happening. And then what happens is we get someone who's hypersensitive to stress and all these triggers are hitting at the same time. And then you have anxiety because that's where anxiety is born, right? Anxiety is not born from stress and not born from cortisol. It's born from overload. Mm-hmm. You know, now my cortisol levels are high. I'm stressed out. I'm not doing anything to take care of my health. Boom, 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 boom. Worry folds in. And here's where the really brilliant part for me is that this was all put in us by Christ. It was broken by us. Christ has told us time and time again, you know, it says it in the Bible in Matthew, therefore do not be anxious about tomorrow, for tomorrow will be anxious for itself, right? Don't worry about what's going to happen tomorrow, right? Because God's got this. Tomorrow's going to take care of itself. And this goes back to trusting God's plan. If God is infinite and he has control of everything, you're not going to worry.
Well, and when you say Matthew, in the LSB Bible, it does they translated that out as do not be worried about your life, right?
Yeah.
It's a huge verse that's critically important.
And I worry about, and I'm not saying I don't worry about anything. My son just got his driver's license. So I'm worried. You know, he's a new driver. Am I going to not sleep over it? No,
but concern I am going to have concerns. Concern is different than worry, though, right?
Yeah,
I think that's where we have there's a differentiation there between a normal and healthy concern for things, and then the anxiety or worry about those things. Okay, so now you could say, well, it's just levels of concern.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. I think. Let me say this about one of the things that when I was going through some stuff, I was traveling a lot. I was in there was a lot of stress, period.
Yep.
And it was not uncomfortable, but if I could get out on my motorcycle for like 2 hours,
yeah,
it was gone.
Yeah.
Because I get on the motorcycle and you got to understand, I think this is why, I'm not one of those guys who like listen to music or anything on the motorcycle. No.
You just rode.
I just rode.
You're like my dad. My dad just rides.
I couldn't stand listening to anything while I'm on a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Right. So anyway, what it is that you're just focused on the road and you're around you and everything else. Cause you have to be hypervigilant when you're on the motorcycle anyway. So what you're doing is you're purposely now doing an activity where you have to be laser focused on this particular thing. At that moment, everything else fades.
Yep.
And then when I would get back and it would be like, I just didn't even remember what I was upset about normally. Right. And so that's really where there's just like, you have to develop these situations for your mind to just let go.
For me, it's the gym. I go into the gym and I walk in and I put in my headphones and I put on usually a sermon or maybe like a podcast, and I just get lost in the physical stress of the workout. So the mental and emotional stress just kind of melts away. And when I walk out of the gym, man, you know, a lot of people go, man, I left the gym, I felt terrible. Dude, when I leave the gym, I am on top of the world.
But I don't deal with it the same way now. Yeah. Because I think once you grow in your faith, those things don't happen as much. Because here's what I'm saying is, and this is what we'll get into a little bit here, but like when Christ says, do not worry, I mean, he means it.
Yeah, he's not BSing.
No, you give your worries to him. Like you have he's taking the sting of death away, all this stuff. There's no sense in it. I would say if you have a problem with anxiety or worry, there's a faith problem there too.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I'm not saying that there's not like chemical imbalances that cause some of this stuff.
Yeah, there is some stuff that can happen, right? That's a little bit out of your control.
Yeah.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that you shouldn't first go to prayer. First go to the word.
Yeah.
Now, when I say that, like here's a good example of what Billy Graham, Billy said, anxiety is the natural result when our hopes are centered in anything short of God and his will for us. Okay. At best, anxiety distracts us from our relationship with God and the truth that he is Lord of heaven and earth. At best. At worst, it's a crippling disease, right?
Yeah.
So the Bible is pretty clear. Like, finally, brothers, let me read this. Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there's anything worthy of praise, think about these things. What you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things, and the God of peace will be with you. This is what in Philippians is talking about, like putting your mind to the thoughts of those things. That will, you fixate on that. You fixate on the gospel. You don't fixate on the actual, all these worldly nonsense or whatever it is. Fixate on those things.
Fixate on the gospel. Don't fixate on the hurt.
Not right.
Right.
So when you look at the biblical verses that are there, because there's plenty of them, but like in Psalm 94:19, when my anxious thoughts multiply within me, your consolations delight my soul. You're thinking about the delights of your soul from your relationship with God. And Proverbs, anxiety in a man's heart weighs it down, but a good word makes it glad. And I really look at this for the importance of having those brothers and sisters in your life that can speak to you.
Well, and also just to kind of bounce off that a little bit, we've all been in places in our life where we've had heavy burdens.
That's true.
And our hearts are heavy. Mm-hmm. But how many times, Reggie, and this is proof that God is telling you, somebody called you during one of those times and they're heartbroken and you put a word on them. And mm-hmm. after you put it on them, a word from God, you stop for a second and go, dude, I need to use that for myself. Right. Because we're not built to worry.
No.
Right. We're not built for that. And the goal for every man who follows Christ is to get home. This is a temporary stopover for us where we have been commissioned by Christ to do the best we can to bring followers, to help him bring followers.
Like we look at the Lord's Prayer.
Yeah.
What is it? The first thing he says how to pray is like you raise up God and you acknowledge his awesomeness, right? Very first thing, hallowed be thy name.
Yeah.
What's the second thing? Thanksgiving.
Thy kingdom come, thy will be done.
You're saying, hey, here you go.
And here we go. Give us this day our daily bread, you know, Thanksgiving, right?
You're saying, hey, you're giving it to me. Anyway, the whole idea here though, is you don't ever say, God, I don't think you can do this. God, I have this problem. It's too small. You don't need to hear it. Well, no.
Well, and I think this subject that we're talking about ties a bunch of stuff together that we've talked about already, right?
Think we did talk about anxiety and stuff
before. Well, but we talk about this in a sense that, you know, Pray to God, you know, your worries will be subjugated. Be ready for the word no and understand that he's your father. He's not telling you no because he doesn't love you. He's telling you no because he knows what's best for you. If you're acknowledging all of these things that, and I struggle with it sometimes. Sometimes I'm like, dude, I want this. But sometimes God goes, nah, dude, you're not ready for it. And I got to be okay with that, right?
Yes.
You know, it's this tying together of the different levels of faith. I have faith in God's word. I have faith that when I pray, he hears me. I have faith that when I'm in trouble, he'll save me. There's a resonating theme that goes on through this, right? There's a resonating theme. And part of that resonating theme is, you know, I hear this a lot. Well, I don't pray a lot because I know I'm going to screw up and God doesn't, you know, I'm worried that he's going to judge me. Go through the Bible and find me someone who wasn't a complete screw up.
No kidding.
Moses,
even Abraham, David, even David, Solomon,
Ruth, all of them were not
Peter
worthy of God. They weren't worthy of salvation. But what they did was they took Christ's words, God's plan, and they laid their faith on it. And even when their brokenness caused them to break, they went right back to God. Hey, Lord, I know what I am. I'm a sinner. I'm giving this to you because I can't fix it, right? That doesn't at all mean that consequences are removed. That's a whole different conversation. But
well,
it does mean that we can move on through life as forgiven without carrying the burden of what we did, right? And that's what this worry really boils down to. I think a lot of worry is us continuing to carry the burden of guilt for things that we've done or that we think we've trespasses, we think we've committed, and things that we didn't quite get right.
Well, I think so too, we get comfortable in certain aspects of our lives, right? We
That
comfort lures us into like a false sense of security kind of thing, right? There's actually huge benefits to pain and suffering.
Yeah.
Which
find peace in the pain, baby.
I mean, let's be honest here, man. I mean, some of the most times when humans are able to change is under suffering and pain. It's when we can see God the clearest because we're actually more open to it. We're in America. We have this warped sense of reality a little bit because we're on this first world. We are so blessed, bro. It's crazy.
We got first world problems. We don't have third world problems.
So here's John MacArthur. He said this: Christians who worry believe God can redeem them, break the shackles of Satan, take them from hell to heaven, put them into his kingdom, and give them eternal life, but just don't think he can get them through the next couple of days.
Yeah.
Now that doesn't make any sense really when you put it in perspective, right? We believe that, okay, yeah, we believe in Christ and we believe that he's victorious. He's overcome everything and he's going to save me and, you know, all this kind of stuff. But yet I'm worried. If he can do all that, you think can't handle your little worry?
Okay. Well, here's my thing.
That's the thing here, right?
Here's where I would put it. He created the world in 8 days. He created everything around us, the universe, the waters. He saved the worst of sinners in the worst of times. He forgave people that he didn't need to forgive. He can wipe us clean in the snap of a finger or carry us forward for the rest of our existence. If he can do all of that, he gonna make sure you don't get sunk or mired in something that really isn't that important. So, you know, I think this goes back to, and dude, I do this a lot, but I've been on this kind of journey. A lot of that goes back to the church. Dude, you got people that you need to know your congregation. Look, I'm not saying don't give money to the church. I'm not saying any of that. But when a minister gets up in front of the church and there's families out there that are literally struggling to get from week to week for groceries and food, and you start laying on that big, thick guilt trap of 10%, you put those people in a position that's untenable by giving them anxiety and guilt for something that at that time they may not be able to control. right?
Yeah, I think money in this country is a different thing than it is in other cultures and places in the world, and that we are hypersensitive to those things.
Yeah.
Okay. And I would say that we are so money centered about things that it just gets blown. I think this gets blown out of proportion a little.
Yeah.
Bit.
Yeah.
Now, and especially if you live, so the difference between like if you're in a third world country and you're in here, like in America, by vast majority have like no issue with feeding your families and stuff like that. Right.
And think about this.
Well, hold on.
We have an entire program to help people who don't have food.
Yeah. But so if you're looking at and you can't do that, it's almost like you're looking around and there's a lot of shame and guilt there be saying that, what did you not do? Like all these other people,
yeah.
And you're having issues with this stuff, whether it's in third world countries, you're like, you're just with everybody else and you're struggling day to day and doing everything else. And it's just, you know, thank God that you actually got fed today kind of thing. Right.
Yeah.
And it's just a different thing for us here. So, why I say that, there's a perspective that we got to keep in mind that, yeah, we have first world problems, but I mean, that's part of the culture and society we live in.
That's
so
true.
There's pressure and stuff in there to be like everyone else, and whether or not that's really logical or should be the way it is. But, you know, if you like live in a shack that is being, you know, that's all you can pay for, but yet your other people in your church are like living in these big homes and all this kind of other stuff. And it's like, you look around, you know, it's easy to fall into the trap of letting that worry about today of feeding your family and everything come into shame and guilt and all this other kind of stuff. And I know some people who've been there.
Yeah.
And it's up to, and here's what I'm saying. This is so critical for the body of the church to, and especially the men, to look at the other men who may be struggling with this and just lift them up and just try to just be there for them as brothers and just know,
yeah.
Especially treat them as you would anybody else. This is a huge one, right? Like if there's a, I hesitate to say like, if there's an event or something,
yeah.
And there's a cost associated with it. You don't go to that guy and go, here's some money for you to attend that event. No.
Hey, would you like to go to that event with me?
You say the group leader, in my opinion, should say, hey, it costs this much. If you want to give some extra to help someone else go who can't maybe do it or whatever, put it here. If you're one of those people who want to go and you can't do it, come see me.
Yeah.
Or something like that. You put something in place so that you don't single out
or
you invite the person.
Or maybe if you're financially capable, you buy an extra ticket or two.
That's what I'm saying.
And when the group's together, you say, hey, guys, we have a couple extra tickets. If anybody couldn't afford to get tickets.
That's it.
I've got just a couple extra tickets here that just we have some leftovers. And don't make them feel lesser than when they're feeling lesser than. But also I will warn people too, and I struggled with this for many years. Comparison is the thief of joy and peace.
Yes.
I'm not wealthy. I have enough to take care of my family and I feel like I'm blessed for that. And I don't really desire, you know, if God chose to bless me with wealth, I would say, okay, that's where you're leading me. But if I spend the rest of my life just being able to take care of my wife and myself and my family and not worrying about what's coming day to day, I consider that a win, especially coming from the background that I came from. With that being said, there are a lot of guys out there that ask the question all the time, well, why not me? Dude, it doesn't matter. You are a good man. You're a provider. You're providing for your family. God has given you the ability to do that. So just take solace in that, man.
Well, and I would say to understand that allowing someone to assist in some way,
yeah,
is blessing them.
Yeah.
Okay. You have to, and this is, I've changed my whole thing. If someone says they want to help me do something, I kind of try to say, yeah, it's almost like on my anymore. Sure, man.
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
When God sends something your way, it has a purpose.
But especially with its dudes, okay? Yeah. Whether it's like, I need help with yard work, or I need somebody comes up, man, I need help with the tree to be cut down, or I need, man, I got to dig a ditch today, or.
Or the vaunted, dude, I need help moving.
I know. But it's an opportunity for that guy, like, to feel like he's helping, which is a blessing.
Yeah.
Like, I love helping people, period. It's the best feeling in the world.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't I give somebody else the opportunity to feel that helping me, right?
Well, and on top of that, as men, we are built to be sacrificial, right? Our whole lives are built to be sacrificial. So if you're being sacrificial, then you're fulfilling your purpose.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is what I mean by worry. Like the worry about these things, man, is like, don't worry about maybe if you have a burden of something that needs to be done, reaching out to someone that is in the church or friend or neighbor or whatever, and maybe allowing them to help you in whatever the burden is. Now here's the one thing that I know, like money, I've had this happen a few times where you give someone generously if they need some paying the bills or something, you do this.
Yeah.
But then it becomes like almost like where they're asking all the time.
Yeah.
Okay. So there is a point in here where you have to kind of go, look, man, we need to change the action that is leading to this problem, where it's just symptomatic stuff at the moment, right?
Maybe I need to help you in another way.
Yeah, like
right? Maybe I need to help you find that job.
Let's go through your budget if you want, and let's see what we can do.
Let me tell you, dude. Like my new job, I stepped out on a limb. I reached out to some people that I was like, you know what, maybe I didn't expect anything, but I sent it out there. I was like, hey, I'm looking to do something different. Would you guys know of anything? What did they do? They helped me change my situation. They didn't hand me cash. They just said, hey, you know what? Brian seems to be an honorable dude. He's done right by us. Let's see if we can do right by him. Right. And they brought me into that circle and they said, here, we're going to do something for you to help you get what you want. We're not going to give it to you. Right. But we're going to give you the circumstance that you need to make that happen. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's the gift. Change the circumstance to make it easier for them to achieve it. Don't achieve it for them. Writing a check is great if the instance calls for it. But sometimes when you're looking at someone's situation and you're saying, all right, well, this guy's telling me he needs help. And then that's why you talk to them. Hey, what's going on that this happened? How'd you get here? And then react with what's needed for the situation, right? I know a lot of guys who are very financially well off and their trigger reaction is to write a check.
Yeah. So and I say most of American.
Yeah. That is not always the best option for what is going on.
And again, this is where I had a huge problem with the church.
Yeah.
Cause that's what they wanted to do all the time. Yeah. And I'm like, bro, I don't need the money for groceries. I don't need money for this and this and this. I need people.
Help.
Like, it's not that.
And let me tell you, as someone who's known Reggie for a long time, he is not the easiest one to ask for help. You know that. I've called you and you've said, dude, I've been going through this for two or three weeks. I'm like, why did you not call? Well, I didn't want to bother anybody.
I know.
But I mean,
I try not to.
Yeah. But the thing is we are brothers, whether we like it or not.
Well, no.
And if you call on me, brother, I'm going to make time.
What I'm saying is I try not to do that. Try not to have a burden that's bothering me, but there's some things I'm trying to work out in my head, right?
Yeah.
Or I'm praying about it or whatever the case may be. But yes, it's ridiculous to sit there and do that.
Especially if you've prayed and you've petitioned Christ, it may be the person that he's sending to help you that is his answer to your prayer, right? Stop being stubborn. It may be, oh, Brian, you prayed for help with this. You prayed for me to help you with this, so I'm going to send somebody to help you. Well, I need to stop and realize that that's God sending me the answer, right? That's not, oh, well, this guy feels sorry for me. No, God moved on him and said, go help Brian. So I have to be open to that blessing, right? That's a blessing. Whether my manly ego wants it to happen or not, that is a blessing that was given to me. So that's part of it too.
We gotta recognize worry, and we gotta understand that that's not what we're supposed to be doing.
No, we're not. That's it will also be a thief of your witness.
Yeah,
because when you're out there trying to talk to people about Christ, and you get into all your worries, it kind of sounds like you don't believe. When I'm telling you, you got to believe in Christ with all your heart and all your mind, but I'm worried about these 96 things that my God can't handle, you don't really have much of a witness at that point.
So worry in the, let's look at the Old Testament, right? So if we say the, here's some examples in the Old Testament, right? Where you see this, a father's rightful concern over the delayed return of his son, 1 Samuel.
Yep.
And the fear of famine in a year of drought, that's in Jeremiah.
Hear it.
Let's see, the Hannah's great anxiety over her childlessness is in 1 Samuel.
Word.
Daniel's distressed over his vision of the four beasts.
Yep.
Eating the bread of the anxious toil is in Psalms.
Moses's distress over leading his people.
The very beginning when Adam and Eve sinned and then they were
hiding.
They were worried of the consequences from God about what they had done. So even from the very beginning, it's there. And then in the New Testament, I mean, look, the Greek and New Testament, it's everywhere. There's like, I think, there's a family of terms. Let's see, there's 26 occurrences of anxiety, which can be anxiety, worry, or care kind of thing mixed in there. But you gotta look at the daily pressure upon me and my anxiety for all the churches. That's in 2 Corinthians, Paul was talking about there. And you still have in like, you know, Philippians, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. 1 Peter, therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God that he may exalt you at the proper time, casting all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. Be of sober spirit, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. Now, notice that it's that the adversary, the devil, is in the same little section as you're casting your anxieties all on God, right?
Yep.
So because you that like you said, it opens up an opportunity.
Yeah.
All he want all Satan wants to do is get in the way of your faith.
Okay,
that's so what he wants to do.
Here's the problem. We all think that the Ten Commandments, a violation of the Ten Commandments, is the window for the devil to come in. Well, that's the bay windows being open, right? Do not kill, you know, do not
idolatry,
no lust, all that stuff. Yeah. The devil doesn't need the bay window to be open. He just needs to have enough of a gap under the door to slip inside, right? So those little worries that snowball is him distorting the reality of what's going on. Right. Again, the devil cannot create. He can only manipulate. So what he does is he manipulates your worries into seeming larger than they are. And I'll give you an example. David committed murder.
Yep.
I think and I want double check me on this, but I think I'm right when I say he broke 7 of the Ten Commandments openly. And came back to God. No lust. No murder. Love thy neighbor. Violation after violation. Yet he was considered a man of God's own heart.
Yeah, after his own heart. Yeah,
after his own heart. Yeah. So that is to say that God does not expect us to live in perfection. He understands that we were born of sin and broken and that we're going to fall short. And that's why you need to stop worrying, because he already knows.
Yeah. I mean, here's what I would say about worry and a lot of things. Okay. You got to be honest with yourself.
Yeah.
So some introspection time to like understand where you're at, where your head's at, what you have a propensity to do or think. And I say this because there's days when all of us, we woke up on the wrong side of the bed.
Yep.
And now we have to understand and know that we are going to be more easily triggered today of all kinds of things. And that's hugely important when it comes to worry too. If you already are a person who has a propensity to worry, then on a bad day, that's going to be elevated, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this is for anything, right? Acknowledging that if you have an anger problem and like on a given day, if you've rolled out of the bed the wrong way or something really got you torqued up, man, you have to kind of internalize some things and realize I'm in a state in which I can fly off the handle.
Or I'm in a state which I'm not being rational.
Exactly. Your perspective of reality is really skewed. And this happens to me all the time. It's difficult some days, man. I mean, you wake up and you just like, or something happens and man, your mind's not right. And learning yourself to understand when you are in that place allows you to step back and go back to the Father and say, I'm here. I got to give this to you. Today's not the day. And just focus on that. And it hugely changes your outcome of situations.
It does.
I have two young girls and a wife, three dogs, two cats, a bunch of chickens, all kinds of things. A house that was built in 76 that has some issues in it all the time. And it's any given day, man, especially with daughters. Let me tell you this, man. If you get up and you're in the wrong state of mind, you are going to talk to them the wrong way.
Yeah.
It's important. Okay. Look, worry's part of that too. Like if something's coming up, like I know when my daughters were having this, they were having a spinal cord surgery, but I don't remember what it was called. Some release. It's like a extra piece of ligament or something that's on the bottom of the spinal cord that causes some issues or whatever.
Yeah.
Wasn't a big deal, but for me, it's like, well,
you're cutting into my daughters.
In their spinal cord, and they've never had a surgery before, right? And man, I got really, there was one day, man, I just got so worried and I had to stop myself. I had to go be alone for a minute. I had to just get on my knees and pray and just, I did. I mean, it was a really, really bad thing, but I had to catch myself and to be like, okay, look, no, this is not for me to be worried about. It's not, this is not for me. I don't have, I can't control this. This is not anything, but I know who can, right? That's one example. I mean, but if I wasn't until that one particular bad day or whatever the case may be, but right.
Well, the end of 2024, dude, I couldn't take many more punches. My mother died. My grandfather died.
Yeah.
My stepmother was gravely ill. My wife's, my father-in-law, who I just love, is just a man I have a tremendous amount of respect for, was having medical issues. But I just stopped at one point and I was like, I don't know what the message is that you're sending, God, but I'm open to receiving it. There's got to be a purpose behind this.
There's always a purpose. It's always a purpose for the good.
And it was the moment that I said that the worry kind of faded and I began to think of things a little differently. You guys have got to realize that of all the people you can turn to in these situations, Christ will judge you the least, right? He will be the one who listens. He will be the one who gives you the room. And I'll be honest with you, man. God wants you to come boldly. If you're angry, he wants your anger. If you're sad, he wants your sadness. If you're aggravated, he wants you to be honest with him and come to him and lay it at his feet, right? Man, I'll tell you, when my grandfather died, I told God, I was like, I don't know how much more I can take. I don't know how many more punches I can take. God, you're going to have to figure this out, because if you don't, I don't know that I can take any more punches. And by God, he did exactly what I asked him to do. He brought me back into line, right? He brought my mind back into line. But I had to literally, like I yelled it in my car. I was like, you're going to have to help me, dude. I can't continue to take these punches one right after the other, right after the other. But I had to be bold. And you have to be bold when you're praying. Be bold, man. Tell God what your heart's full of. If it's full of anger, if it's full of frustration, tell him.
What what is what I know now about the many, many, many struggles and trials is that through those struggles and trials has gained perseverance.
Yeah.
I am way more resilient now than I was even a year ago, 2 years ago, 10 years ago, right? All these other stuff that you just say, I can't do this, and you give it to him. He molds you, forms you from it.
Yeah.
And so the worry is just part of it is just like, no, it's, I know from what I have, even if tomorrow I go see him, I persevered through whatever the hell it is, but I'm already going to be raised in glory. So what am I worried about?
Yeah. Worst case scenario, I go to heaven.
Yes.
Okay.
Now here's the, another part of this I think is for us husbands is to look out for your wives.
Yes. We are protect your wife.
My wife can get wound up into some worry, bro.
Yes.
And I tried to find some actual, there was a bunch of nonsense about women versus men on this subject, and I couldn't really find something I liked. Not that I disagreed with it. It was just kind of from sources I didn't really trust.
Yeah. Well, so, one thing I can tell you too is women have a higher level of existent cortisol hormone and things like that than men do.
And they have a much more higher tendency to be empathic, right?
Yeah.
And empathy and
to sense emotion.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So worry comes from that. And, be a man of God with your wife and be, pray for her and her release of the worry. Counsel her to cast her worry onto him. That's what you could be doing. It doesn't mean you aggressively do anything like that, but I mean, acknowledge that when your wife is in a position where something's really, really bothering her, you have to be delicate in the way you approach those situations, but it doesn't mean you stray from the truth of what is the answer, which is hand it to him.
There's nothing wrong with being vigilant. There is something wrong when your vigilance becomes resistance to doing what you're called to do.
Yes.
Which is to I pray for my kids and I pray for my wife. Every time I pray for their health, their safety, their lives, their development. I am a very vigilant father and husband when it comes to the safety of my family, but I don't allow my vigilance to interfere with what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah. I mean, you just got to be because you got to understand that there's a part of spiritual warfare that happens in your walk between you and your responsibilities of being the spiritual leader of the household. So you're the responsible one there that should be looking out for those things that could help your family in case, especially with worry.
Yeah.
So whether it be your daughter, your son, your wife, whatever, just make sure you as the man of the household and the spiritual leader, step up, have a kind, loving conversation, counsel your family. Look, there's no reason to be worried. That's not what we're supposed to do. He's got this.
Yeah.
Give it to him.
Yeah. God's got this.
And if you need a hug or whatever, look, I'm right here. Yeah. I'll help too.
Yeah.
But yeah, cast your worry on him. That's it.
For sure.
So there's I don't know. There's different aspects you will see in about worry. It's well written in the biblical text.
Yeah, it's very well covered in the text.
It's very much there. And if you find yourself in a place where you worry a lot, or that's a constant chronic thing, then there's definitely some, I would encourage them to speak to a Christian counselor.
Yes.
Especially Christian counselor. I've seen some of the secular therapists tackle worry and it's pills and stuff. And that's not the solution all the time. There's some really good, there's actually one of even, there's even a, hold on, let me find it. There was a doctor, here it is, Dr. Tim Alchin, who, from the Biblical Counseling Center. Anxiety is what we feel when our body is responding to the emotion of fear. Worry is the thought process that mulls over and gives power to the object of our fear. Okay. So this is from the counseling center. These are counselors from what they're saying. And, you know, he had an article that was fantastic about, you know, where there was certain types of anxiety, worry in the text, where it was referenced, how to deal with it. It's very good. Right. Yeah. So the counseling in the Christian realm is pretty tuned up to worry and anxiety and all that kind of stuff. And I think I'd go there before I tried to go anywhere else. Right. Yeah. But anyway, I worry no longer about the topic of worry.
Okay. So So I got a question this week from somebody that I'm.
Oh boy.
Chris, you're out there. I told you I would cover this topic. Chris is a guy that's watched a few of our episodes and is enjoying our content. And he asked me a question, and I told him I would answer the question on the show. He says, I've listened to a couple of you guys' episodes, and you guys are really different. He goes, why do you think you do so well being so different? And I had to think about that for a minute, but I think it comes down to this. If you're looking for two more opposite dudes, Reggie and I are pretty much opposite end of the spectrum in a lot of ways. But our hearts are for the same thing. And that is for, number one, for Christian men. Number two, probably just for men in general and maintaining. But in all, Reggie and I have gotten to know each other in a way that we've become friends over the years. And Reggie and I are really, we just want to help people. And I think that just that common tie between the two of us is a big reason why we do this. Reggie has a traditional household where his wife is at home and raising their kids and they're homeschooling. And I think that's awesome. And a lot of times I'm in awe of how they balance all that and get that together. And then I have more of a non-traditional home. My wife and I both work and my kids are in public school and I have to fight a battle daily of kind of wiping away what the garbage the world teaches my kids and trying to instill truth in them. And we do the best we can. And my kids are good kids and they're God-centered kids and they love the Bible. But I think the common denominator for Reggie and I, number one, is we see the state of emergency that our world is in when it comes to their spiritual growth and their spiritual health.
Especially for men.
And we see this lack of leadership and this loss of leadership by men in the home and them being broken. And we both together want to help. We want to provide a message saying that feeling you have where you feel like you should be the leader in your home and you should be helping move your family forward. That's not an unhealthy feeling. That's actually naturally how God built you to be, is the leader in your home. That would be the main reason why I say we do this together, is because, you know, we yearn for a day when biblical manhood is the norm.
I would put it this way. Yeah, we have some differences, dude. But
yeah.
the what we have in common, though, is the root of what makes it work.
Yeah.
Whether or not we're our it's like the differences are like,
yeah,
so
surface.
Yeah.
Just surface differences, right?
Like in the root of it, though, we see the world from a pretty similar lens.
Yeah.
Not exactly the same for sure, but we've rooted our worldview and the way we perceive reality a lot alike.
Well, and on top of that,
you know,
we have a healthy ability to agree to disagree when we need to, right?
You know,
there have been moments where Reggie and I have differed on topics, nothing massive, but it's not something that we allow to be divisive in our relationship as friends. We're naturally not going to agree on everything, right?
But it's the main things.
But it's the main things that hold us together and make this important, right?
It makes it work, right?
Yeah.
So the commonality that we share is pretty significant enough,
yeah,
to allow conversations and discussions around topics and stuff where
a lot of people would be very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean,
we won't.
But yeah, I mean, God being the gospel centered and, you know, seeing the world in a certain kind of way that helps blend it all together.
Yeah.
Because even in our differences, they're really just lifestyle things.
Yeah. It's just, we were raised different. We were kind of in different environments. We had different experiences.
But the other thing is too, though, I will say this is the big thing. We're both not like silver spoon.
No, dudes, not at all.
Right.
No.
There's a, it's like the trauma and like is like, I guess we've both been to those places, grew up kind of rough. You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing allows us to be in a place of where we're resilient to a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that even though those traumatic events and stuff have been different.
Yeah.
But because we've gone through a bunch of nonsense and lived through it and kind of grown through those things also puts us here.
Yeah.
Right. And so, yeah. 'Cause I mean, this probably conversation wouldn't work if it was like one of those people who had, you know, I would say have the misfortune of like growing up in a really great house and like doing this and not, I shouldn't say misfortune. That's not the right, that's not right either, but
alternate experience.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it just, yeah. So that helps quite a bit, dude. Fulfill things out because we're not sitting here, not have gone through some things now. And the same thing with our kids though. He has two boys. I have two girls.
Yeah. Different worlds.
Yeah.
We're in different stages of parenting. I'm parenting teenagers. He's parenting young kids.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you know, there's, he doesn't know what it's like to raise a girl.
I have no idea.
Yeah. No,
and
no.
Honestly, I don't want one. You know, don't get me wrong. I love Reggie's daughters like they're my own. I would do anything for them, but to have to raise them, I think I would be like a one-legged man in a butt-kicking contest.
It seems that way, but it's actually pretty awesome.
I know.
And you know what? My experience with a teenage son and raising that up gives me a little commonality with Brian on what he goes through with his teenagers and stuff.
Sure.
But, you know, there's just all kinds of things. But none of that was really the important stuff.
Yeah,
that,
none of that's really the driver behind why we do this.
No.
Right?
Or why
we're friends or why we know each other or like each other.
Yeah.
I like Reggie because if Reggie thinks it's stupid, he'll tell me it's stupid.
Yes.
I really like blunt people in my existence, and Reggie is as blunt as they come.
But we had a common church that we really loved and stuff that we were active in and all that kind of stuff. That helped a lot to carterize some of the things and everything else.
Yeah.
And I mean, there are many times when we were sitting there giving out donuts and coffee and we didn't even sit in the sermon. We just sat there and
talked to people
and made everybody laugh.
Yeah, yeah. That's what we did. So, anyway, well, I hope that answers the question.
Indeed. Right.
Indeed. Well, I think we've reached the end of this, this trail of many tales. Indeed. And, I hope you guys have a great week. Thank everybody who listens, watches. Thank you all. Like, comment, subscribe. You know, one thing I want you to know is we do appreciate you and who you are and the fact that you take time to listen to us when you do. So, anything, Reg?
I'm good.
All right. I'm Brian.
I'm Reggie.
See you guys.
Bye-bye.